Can you tell me a story?
Sure. Once upon a time, a mom needed a new car.
Was she brave?
She was tired, mostly. But she went to Carvana.com and found a great car at a great price. No secret treasure map required.
Did she have to fight a dragon?
Nope. She bought it 100% online. From her bed, actually.
Was it scary?
Honey, it was as unscary as car buying could be.
Did the car have a sunroof?
It did, actually.
Okay, good story.
Car buying you'll want to tell stories about. Buy your car today on
Carvana.
Delivery fees may apply.
Welcome to Left Front Presence. I'm Jeff Gordon of the Post-Dispatch, joined by our beat reporter, Matthew DeFranks. As the season edges ever closer, it seems it's getting to be time, as Drew Bannister is looking at his group, to, hey, pick it up a little bit here, guys. Come on.
Yeah, it was a little bit surprising to hear after, you know, the fifth preseason game that he was really disappointed, despondent. I would say upset would be a fair word to use after Tuesday's game against Columbus. You know, I think on the one hand, you understand where he comes from as a coach. I think the one thing that I've learned, you know, covering hockey is that coaches coach. Coaches don't coach what is going right a lot of times, right? They look at things that they can correct, that they can impact, that they can coach in practice, and they, you know, many times focus on those. And so coaches coach, they see the negative things, and you know that applies regardless to what season that they're in, whether it's preseason, regular season, postseason, prospect camp, you know, prospect term, whatever. Like they want to coach's coach. And so I understand it from that perspective, that you know, he has a job to do and he wants to get the most out of his players, and he believes that that starts right now. And the other side is, well, it's preseason. They haven't even iced a full NHL lineup. I think the more disappointing part of the preseason is that none of the bubble guys have really stepped up a ton to, you know, show themselves as players that can be part of the NHL roster. I think that's probably the more disappointing part to me, but definitely Drew Bannister not happy with the way preseason has gone so far for his club.
Well, the stats that you shared with our readers about the defensive pairing of Justin Falk, one of my faves, and the new guy, Phil Roberg there, not good. They seem to be, you know, I mean, you could look, there's really nothing you could look at those numbers and find any good in. When they were out there, they were scrambling.
Yeah, and it was honestly one of those things where I saw, you know, when you watched them on Tuesday, you looked at Broberg and you saw flashes of what he could do, skating with the puck, showing a little physicality, showing his reach. You saw a little bit what the Blues saw when they wanted to go out and get him. And you know, then you looked at the analytics, and for me it didn't quite match up with what I was seeing. And a lot of that is you know, sometimes that happens with pairs like that, and sometimes you have moments that flash, but maybe the reason that they flash is because everything else is stuck in their own zone. And you know, for those that aren't aware of the numbers I'm talking about. So on Tuesday night against Columbus, Justin Falk and Philip Roberg were on the ice for 16 minutes and 21 seconds at 5-on-5. During that time, the Blue Jackets had a 22-3 edge in shot attempts, and the Blues were outshot 13-1 during that time. So not much in the way of puck possession down at the other end of the ice, and a lot of it in their own zone. So, yeah, definitely flashes from Broberg, but overall not a night you're really writing home a lot about.
And I thought Drew Bannister handled it well. You know, you point out that, you know, Philip played real well against the Utahs. But this was, you know, this maybe, again, he's trying to establish himself and maybe got caught running around a bit. Trying, you know, as he said, trying to do too much. Seemed to take it easy on Broberg, understanding this is a long process.
Yeah, I mean, and this is something that Doug Armstrong mentioned, is that they won't be judging him by Christmas, right? Like, we're free to, I guess. you know? But the Blues won't be looking at him in 3 months and saying, Yeah, you know what? I think that was a good move, or I think that was a bad move. Yeah, it is a long season. It should be, if everything goes well for the Blues, a long career in St. Louis for Broberg. So, he's a project right now. I think they knew that. They knew he had never been a full-time NHL player before. He had never had a top four role. He'd never really had this sort of responsibility that he will have in St. Louis this year, and it's something that he has to grow into. It's a role that they want him to step into and grow into and eventually earn that contract, even though they know he's not worth that right now.
On the plus side, Justin Falk had a rough year last year with the injuries, just tried to play through and just obviously wasn't himself, didn't have the same mobility, had a chance to rebuild over the summer to train correctly, without beyond the injury, get himself healthy. Now he looks so far like the Justin Falk you're more accustomed to seeing, I assume.
Yeah, and talked to him the other day, and then this will be in our expanded sports section on Sunday with the Blues preview, a little story on Justin Falk and his, I guess for lack of a better phrase, road to recovery. It was something that he mentions, an ankle injury that kind of popped up three times last year. It was a little bit before that Colorado game on December 29, and then obviously he had the big injury that happens against Colorado in the last minute of the game. He kind of fell back under on top of his legs and kind of twisted his ankle a little bit more. So he had that one, and then later on in Calgary he kind of he got rolled up on is what he said, and kind of flared up on him again. So he kind of went through a trio of ankle injuries that didn't allow him to be 100%. He basically said he wasn't 100% after Christmas, and he mentions he's a professional athlete, and a lot of that comes with egos, and you want to be out there. You don't think your presence is hurting the team, but in the end, it actually might. So he spent the summer, with some rest, getting some rest basically on his ankle and his shoulder. Later in the season, he had a shoulder issue that forced him out after that San Jose game. And now he feels good. He feels healthy. He feels back to himself. He's going to have a much different role this year than he's had in previous years in St. Louis. I think when you look at his role in the top power play unit, he's going to be running that point. And that's not something that the Blues have asked him to do since he came over in 2019. Obviously, he had that one year with Alex Pietrangelo, who was running a power play, and then also he crossed over with Vince Dunn, and obviously there was Torey Krug, and now all three of them are no longer here in St. Louis, and Justin Falk, you're the guy to do it. Now, obviously Perunovic could make his case for that, but he's got to be in the lineup to be part of the power play, and that hasn't seemed to be the case yet. So Falk will have a role that more mirrors his time in Carolina, I think. And he'll also have to adjust to a new pairing. He's had Torey Krug as a partner for the last, was it 4 years, I guess, 3, 4 years. And now he's going to have Philip Roberg this year. And we'll see how that pairing does and how each of them adjusts to a new defensive partner.
I like the element on the power play. This team had some success back in the day of low to high, and certainly Falk has a shot mentality, which is useful. I mean, there were times when that was missing from the power play when you have playmaker types running the point versus shooter types. Clearly, Falk's a shooter. That was just the team you mentioned as well in Carolina. He's always a pretty good power play guy, a shot volume guy. That will give it a different look just to have the hammer there. Any sense of how the rest of the pieces could come together? Because again, the life without David Perron was pretty rough last year. There has been a pretty rough period, when he's not been in the mix, without that one-time shot. Any sense of, besides Falk bringing that shot mentality to the first group, how things might fit together?
Yeah, so we've got to look at the top power play unit the other night against Columbus. It had Jake Neighbors at the net front. Jordan Kyrou was in the left circle. Pavel Buchnevich in the slot. Robert Thomas in the right circle. And Falk at the point. So that's basically how the power play unit was in the second half of the season, with the exception of Falk and for Krug. That when they found Jake Neighbors at the net front, that's where they found success. They got pucks to the goal, and Neighbors was there to kind of cash in a lot of high danger chances. And everything else, I mean, it looks pretty familiar. Robert Thomas, we know what he can do running the power play on the flank there. Buchnevich seems to be pretty comfortable in that bumper position in the slot. And Kyrou, he is on his one-timer side. He's not a one-timer guy per se, but it does add a different element when you have at least the threat of it over there. As far as the second unit, we haven't seen that at all this preseason, which I'm slightly surprised at. The other day we asked Drew Bannister, hey, like, when are you gonna practice power play? And I was going through my notes, and the only times that the Blues have practiced the power play has been during morning skates, when they have that game group on the ice. And as we know, during preseason, it's not always that group that is the NHL group. So you haven't seen the second unit be on the ice together. From what you can kind of piece together right now, they've had Braden Schenn kind of in the left flank, I believe. Brandon Saad would make sense in the bumper at the net front, but he could miss the first week of the season, expecting his third child. Zach Bolduc, if he's in the lineup, they've had him on the right flank on his one-timer side. At the point, could be Perunovic. They've used Ryan Suter there as well. They've used Nick Leddy there. They could use Colton Parayko. They threw out Philip Roberg. It's kind of a it's a roller derby down there, and for the point on the second unit, you don't know who's it going to be, and I wonder how much jockeying there will be throughout the season. And then at the net front, they've shown Texier there, they've shown Holloway there, they've shown Walker there. Like, I don't know who's actually going to be at the net front on the second unit. Maybe we'll see it tonight when they take on Dallas, and maybe a more NHL complete lineup. But I'm just surprised that they haven't had a full kind of special teams day. Around this time of training camp, you see teams go 5-on-4, 5-on-3, 4-on-3, 6-on-5, 3-on-3. They'll have just a whole day of special teams, basically. All these different situations where they can at least get a look at everything before they move into the regular season. And we haven't seen that yet. So curious to see if we see that, whether it's, I guess they would really only have maybe two or three practices left before the regular season starts in Seattle on Tuesday. And they got a game tonight against Dallas. They could have practice tomorrow. They have a game Saturday. They fly on Sunday to Seattle. I don't know if they're practicing before that. And then they practice on Monday in Seattle. So there's not a ton of time to get one of those kind of practices in there. And we'll see what it looks like when they do have a situational special teams practice.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch the chase for the cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
I think it's fair to say they're going to lean heavy on that first unit.
Yeah,
A lot of minutes for those cats.
It might be one of those deals where you have like a minute and a half for that first unit and 30 seconds for the second one.
So you mentioned Teche, that is, and you wrote right about him making the jump. I know from Columbus, I know some folks in Columbus liked his, liked his skill set coming back from his year away from the league. He's a pretty versatile guy with some skill and some history of on the PK and such. Didn't have very good metrics last year, but who did? Because Columbus wasn't very good. He's fit in so far, and with the lucky line shuffle that Drew Bannister had, he was getting a look some prime ice in practice.
Yeah, he's been a standout so far, I would say, in the two games that he has played. 10 combined shots on goal in those two games, 7 on Saturday, 3 on Tuesday. He picked up an assist on Saturday against Chicago, and it's more than the numbers. It's how he plays and sometimes the puck possession, the hands, the skill, the skating that he can bring. And I don't want to get too carried away with Texier because last year he was a 30-point guy in Columbus, and that was across 78 games. So it's not like you're expecting him to come in and light it up, especially since that was basically a career year for him. He hasn't had otherwise a full 82-game season in the NHL. Obviously, COVID had something to do with that. Personal reasons had something to do with that. But he's not a guy that has produced much past the 35 to 40 range, 30, 40, 30 to 40 range, I would say, right, across an entire season. And that's a useful player when you put him in your bottom six. And I do think he'll be a guy that bounces around from top of the lineup to bottom of the lineup and has a bunch of different line mates. They've talked about thinking about using him at center. It's not quite a full-blown conversation yet, but it is at least a thought for them to think about him at center. And I wonder if we see that if injuries do happen and they don't want to use guys like Shen, Walker, or Sundqvist down the middle. I think that could be an option if they wanted it, but it doesn't seem to be that way right now. And yeah, you mentioned yesterday during practice, he was on a line with Pavel Buchnevich, and that was something that we probably would not have expected when we started training camp. And I don't really know what to make about the lines yesterday during practice. Did move around guys a lot. Sometimes preseason lines, they don't stick. Sometimes when a coach is upset, maybe they do. I don't know. But he was on the line with Pavel Buchnevich and Jordan Kyrou, and that's intriguing because the day before he was on a line with Nathan Walker and Aleksei Torpchenko. So a little bit different, a little bit different there.
Yeah, I guess it's important for the coach. Well, he wants the ability from time to time to move a guy up. And when he wants to mix up the lines, he wants to know, are there guys I can move up on a short-term basis, maybe part of one game, maybe for a couple games, play up a little bit just to jar things and then, fall back into your normal role. He probably falls in the category of a guy that could do some spot duty moving up in it during the course of a game and then, of course, moving back to a more comfortable role. I guess Holloway could be another guy. It's hard to judge him. A decent producer in college, certainly a good producer in the A, not given much of an offensive role at all in Edmonton. Do you see a guy that could, again, talk about not anchoring one of the or being a regular top six guy, but a guy that could bump up once in a while when the coach is trying to stir things up, as at least he did in practice yesterday?
Yeah, and I do think that, I mean, they do have different skill sets, all of these guys that they added, but at their core, Holloway, Texier, Joseph, they do have similar attributes in terms of speed, skill, and some of them may have more of it in one area and more of it in another area, but at their core, they're similar-ish players where you could see them moving up and down the lineup, all of them. I mean, yesterday, Holloway was with Thomas and Neighbors. And that's different than being with Faxa and Joseph, who he was with before. Like, these are different roles for these guys that they put him in yesterday. And it seems like they could be able to do that, as you mentioned, throughout a game. And they've liked Holloway. They've liked what he's brought. They like the speed that he brings, the compete level that he brings. And as you mentioned, he does have some scoring touch from his amateur and AHL days. And we've seen that a lot of times for a player as young as he is translate to NHL success. So I think they do believe that they have something in him that can play in that role. Obviously, I think they would hope that comes to fruition after what they gave up to get him and Broberg. I guess you throw them together. So yeah, he's a guy that I think they can move up and down. And he's another guy that, like, he hasn't had that offensive opportunity, like you mentioned, like in Edmonton. After what they did this summer, he's probably not even sniffing any sort of offensive responsibility. When you have the guys they have, McDavid, Draisaitl, Nugent-Hopkins, you add in Skinner, you add in Arvidsson, you have Hyman there. You have a lot of guys who are taking up a lot of offensive oxygen. And I was actually surprised the other day. I looked at Holloway's history in overtime because the Blues put him out there for two shifts in that overtime game against Chicago. He almost scored on the first one. He almost assisted a winner on the first one. He did score on his second shift. Like, he looked dynamic in overtime, and it is preseason. It is Chicago. Normal disclaimers, right? But I looked up what his history was in overtimes, and he, I think, had 13 seconds. I want to say 13 seconds total in Edmonton in the regular season of 3-on-3 overtime. So it's not like he's got a lot of experience in even those types of roles. And I wonder how much of that he's going to get here in St. Louis.
One more guy in terms of guys moving up and down the lineup. In Ottawa, he did get to play up some, Joseph, and he did have a scoring spurt playing up. Again, it's not what he's going to do for an entire season, but the fact that he has demonstrated the ability to play up, play with better players and hold his own. Just again, when for a coach that's always looking for options, knowing that injuries are coming or lagging performance or just the need to shake things up in the course of a game, that's useful.
Yeah, and this has always been kind of a head scratcher to me, why Ottawa had to attach a third round pick for the Blues to take on Matthew Joseph. I mean, he had 35 points last year in 72 games. He's making 2.95. Like, it's not an outlandish contract, and for his production, it's maybe a little bit over market, but to give up a third round pick in order just to get rid of him was a little bit surprising. And in a way, that third round pick ended up helping the Blues get their pick back from Pittsburgh and then use that second round pick they got back from Pittsburgh to offer sheet Broberg. So they used that asset they got from Joseph to, in a few different ways, to do the offer sheet maneuvers with Broberg and Holloway. But yeah, I mean, he had a big enough role last year in Ottawa. He was 16 and a half minutes, 35 points. He's got the speed. He's got a little bit of jam in his game. He's a very lively character. He's one of those guys where you walk past him, he's got a smile on his face. You know that he's around because you can probably hear him before you see him. Drew Bannister talked about him on the bench being very positive, bringing a lot of energy. And when I spoke to Matthew Joseph about it, he says, "Yeah, that's just kind of how I always am. I'd like to bring positivity, and you don't want to be annoying, but you want to bring, kind of, for lack of a better word, good vibes to the bench, right?" And I found it funny that he was like, "Yeah, I tried not to be annoying, but I like to be positive." It's just a happy guy, right? So I think he brings different vibes into the dressing room as well.
Going to his brother on the team, you look at the defensive core, and we talked a lot about Broberg trying to grow into a role next to Falk. Currently, there's still Nick Leddy stapled to Colton Parayko, and the Athletic did an analysis of the Blues, and of course, their analytics people hate Parayko, but they finally figured out that they hate Leddy more, at least in that role. I think Nick's held up fine for who he is, but who he is, he shouldn't be in that role. Is there any hope that PO can move up and log some time there, or is it just not enough there? I know he was a guy that played up a little bit in Pittsburgh before falling back, his career going the other way. Any chance that there could be some relief? Is there any other way you can align these defensive pairs, given the obvious challenge that the Leddy Parayko pairing faced all last year?
Yeah, and as far as Leddy and Parayko, like we've talked about here before, I think they were fine for what they did. They had both had good years last year, bounced back from the year before. Leddy hasn't been used to that type of role throughout his entire career. Parayko struggled in 22, 23, and they both really looked like they were back to who they were last year, skating the puck out of the zone, helping in transition, taking on the toughest matchups in the entire league, basically. And like we've also mentioned before, that's not a top pair that's going to drive a lot of offense. And when you're looking at top pair defensemen, that's what you want out of them as well. You want them to take on tough matchups, win tough matchups, and then drive offense. And they don't drive enough offense to, win the possession battle. When you look at, being over 50% against these top lines. So yeah, I get where you're coming from, it's not quite a top pair, even though they have done well under their circumstances. As far as possible replacements for Nick Leddy, I would look more at Philip Broberg first, just the way that his size is, the way he skates, the way he moves, the way his stick is. Like, we've talked about this before. To me, looks like a Jay Bouwmeester, facsimile. Not an exact carbon copy, but you squint hard enough and you wait 10 years and maybe it's Jay Bouwmeester. But that's obviously yet to be seen on a full-time basis for that guy. And P.O. Joseph, when I spoke to him the other day, like his brother, very, very friendly guy, very very smiley guy, likes to chat with people. And he did play 52 games last year with Pittsburgh. He did play a lot of them with Chris Letang, so he did get prime minutes, at least for some of them. It was interesting. He missed 6 weeks with a stingray sting. Probably the first time that I'd ever heard a hockey player miss time because of a stingray sting. But the way he was saying it, they were out on the California road trip. He was at the beach, and then one moment, boom, felt something on his ankle. And the next 10 minutes, he said it felt awful, just a very painful. Had to go to the ER. They determined that it was a stingray sting, because he wasn't sure whether it was like a crab or a rock or a jellyfish or anything like that. Turns out it was a stingray sting. Missed 6 weeks on it with an ankle injury, and came back in December. So that was the first time I'd ever heard of that before, Gordon.
Well, that's memo to Matt. When you're on your West Coast swing and you want to go see the beach, cover up a bit, watch your feet. Wow, yeah, that's great. All right, last thing here on the net front for this week. There's a lot of chit chat, Matt, in the around the NHL about the length of the of training camp and the preseason. Certainly much shorter than it used to be, but still. The league looking possibly to expand the regular season. There's a lot of injuries this year in preseason elsewhere around the NHL. There's going to be a push maybe to shrink it even more. But that seems pretty tough. I mean, you watch what teams do with the preseason. You want to give some kids a look, and you also want to make sure your AHL guys integrate some with the team because you may need them during the course of the year, and they might as well be familiar with the team at this level. And ultimately, you don't play your regulars a ton. It's more for the young guys and then for the AHL guys to just make sure that they know how this is going to work when there are call-ups. What would in your mind it would be? Would it be bad or it would it be good to change the nature of, I guess, the preseason? This would cut out a lot of what we see preseason used for.
Yeah, I think there are many people right now that have hit a training camp wall. And you're like, well, 2 weeks in, like, I'm over this right now. I don't like we haven't done anything. Nothing's changed in the 2 weeks of the training camp has gone on, and I would understand if they wanted to start the regular season tomorrow. I get that entirely. I think all it would do, from my perspective, it would change how coaching staffs approach it. Right now, as you mentioned, you see a lot of junior guys, you see a lot of AHL guys, especially early on, and that still could be the case. But I think it would also add more scrimmages to preseason. You have to have some sort of evaluation tool. You just can't base it off of, one game here or there and then practice drills. Like, coaches say they get stuff out of practice. As we've seen with Drew Bannister recently, he said practices have been great. The games have not been. We need to translate it, so it doesn't always kind of correlate practice to game. But I think if you can get some more scrimmages in there, you can have more evaluation, and you can have guys, NHL veterans, that don't have to be in preseason games. But it is a balance that I think if you ask players, you say, well, yeah, I only play in two or three preseason games anyway. It doesn't matter if they cut two of the eight, and coaches are saying, well, we have to get ready for the season. We haven't seen our NHL team yet. Well, like, no one's keeping them from icing an NHL roster in any of these games, to be quite honest. So it's a balancing act, but I do think it would just change the way that teams go about training camp, and would maybe add more scrimmages, which we haven't seen any scrimmages this camp for the Blues. And part of that is they had 2 days of camp, and then they start playing preseason games. So there's real no need for scrimmages when you're playing games all the time. but I think it would just change what coaches do and how they plan practices.
Well, a lot of coaches and players would be sad to know going forward that you wouldn't get to go to some exciting locations for some of these games, like a Wichita or an Independence, Missouri, to play out at that facility off of I-70. So there have been some interesting games over the years that they've played trying to, for whatever reason, spread hockey to some of these markets. So that could all go by the wayside. It seems like Gary Bettman's racing toward a CBA, wanting to get envisioning that, keeping labor peace, making some adjustments. Expansion, we'll see, where they go with that. But overall, a good time for the league. But I think around the league, everybody's ready for the real games. So it's an interesting season awaits. Well, that's it for this edition of the NetFront. For Matt DeFranks, I'm Jeff Gordon. Remember that you can get all of our, if you're listening to us on a podcast app, remember that you've got a lot of cool videos, a lot of cool stuff. In addition to what you see in the print edition of our newspaper, on our digital edition of our newspaper, there's just a ton of stuff. So make sure you check it out. Until next time, for Matt, I'm Jeff. See ya.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or Die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1, 3, and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.